Welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. Here's your host, Michael Bassetta, political scientist at Lund University.
Remember, you can follow the show on Twitter at SM&P Podcast and visit us on the web at socialmediaandpolitics.org.
Hey, hey, how about that? Got a professional voiceover. That's when you know you've arrived. Thanks so much for tuning in, y'all. I have a fantastic, interesting, and funny episode for you today. My guests are Maria Pendolino and Ian Fishman. They are the co-founders of Blue Wave Voiceover, which is a collective of professional voiceover artists who are lending their voice to Democratic candidates in the 2020 elections. And you know, we've all heard how social media is moving more towards images and video. And while that's true, there's still an important role for audio and voice in political advertising. Whether you're a campaign trying to communicate a sense of authority or authenticity, or in the case of a citizen testimonial ad where the citizen is endorsing you, you need to have the voice of that target group reflected in the message you're trying to send. So what's cool about Blue Wave Voiceover is they have a roster of 20 professional voiceover actors whose voices run the gambit of identities that make up the modern Democratic electorate. And you can go to their website, bluewavevoiceover.com, and check out the different voices. I'll play a couple of them for you here. They're also on Twitter at BlueWaveVO and Instagram at Blue Wave Voiceover. And it's really cool, actually, to hear those different voices all kind of back to back. So I'll play a couple for you now. Let's start with our guests, Maria and Ian, who both reflect the white Caucasian millennial voice. So let's start with Maria and see how that sounds.
A former prosecutor, Judge Jill Karofsky, stood up for victims of sexual assault and domestic violence. And she's been honored for it. She's backed by Wisconsin nurses, teachers, law enforcement, and judges. Jill Karofsky for Wisconsin Supreme Court.
And then here we'll have Ian's.
It's no secret that Moscow Mitch McConnell is the least popular character in Washington. Maybe it's because his voting record favors the wealthy 98% of the time. Or maybe it's because he voted to raise taxes on the middle class a perfect 100% of the time. When you add it all up, it's time to kick Mitch to the curb.
But let's say you're a candidate who wants to reach out to an urban community. This is what you might be looking for.
Elected to the Louisiana House of Representatives in 2015, Renee's immediate action was so impressive, she ran unopposed in her next two elections.
Or let's say that your polling data suggests you need to reach out to Hispanic females.
California is the largest voting state in America, and Latinos make up to 15% of the electorate, enough to be a make or break voting bloc.
Or my favorite, let's say you're a Blue Dog Democrat looking to connect with small business owners in the South.
Chris O'Neill is a small business owner, a family man, and a dedicated Christian. He has experience balancing a business and a family budget, and he understands the importance of watching every dime we spend.
So I think it's really cool to hear that range side by side, and you can imagine all those voices going into a dramatic American political ad, which for me is just the funnest part about American politics, is watching and dissecting that stuff. But what's also interesting is that each individual actor or actress can do a whole wide range of voices. And so definitely don't miss at the end of this episode, we're going to do a bit of an improv demo where Maria and Ian have sent me some scripts that they've done, used in real political campaigns, and we'll dial up different accents and emotions, and they are absolutely hilarious. So before we get to that, we'll talk about voiceovers in political ads broadly, some differences between political marketing versus commercial marketing, and also, of course, how political copy differs on social media versus traditional media. So fun episode. I can promise it's great sound quality, at least. But without further ado, let me turn it over to Maria and Ian. Again, they are the co-founders of Blue Wave Voiceover. Maria, Ian, thanks for taking the time out. Welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much. Really, really happy to be here, man.
So why don't we start out with a brief introduction into Blue Wave Voiceover? Why did you decide to launch the initiative this election cycle, and what can voiceover talent offer to Democrats specifically?
Yeah, so it was kind of the mid to late 2019. And, you know, I was looking at how the Democratic field was shaping up at that time. You know, we had a lot of people throwing their hats into the ring for the Democratic presidential nomination. And I had made a political voiceover demo in 2018 before the midterms and knew that, you know, political advertising was definitely going to be very active in both the presidential campaign and with a lot of people looking to get involved in politics. So from a purely business point of view, you know, I was kind of thinking, how can I market myself as a voiceover talent to book more political jobs when the advertising cycle heats up coming out of 2019 and into 2020? I'm a female kind of millennial voice artist, and I knew that, you know, when I was marketing to people who produce political spots, whether it's a, you know, a political consultancy or an advertising agency that, you know, picks up a few political projects here and there or to campaigns directly, I knew that as a relatively youthful Caucasian female, I would probably be the voice that they needed one every 8 times, one every 10 times. Sometimes they would just need someone who isn't me. So instead of just marketing myself and my own individual voice to these companies, I thought, you know, what could I do to make it easier for them? How could I give them a one-stop shop to find the voices that they needed? And the other part of it was, I had kind of made the decision for myself that I didn't want to audition for Republican or conservative ads. I think in cycles previous, it's not been uncommon to find voice actors feeling kind of purple. They would voice for some blue candidates, voice for some red candidates, even if they didn't believe in a particular organization or PAC's mission. We're just kind of hired hands. You know, I don't necessarily use every product that I'm a commercial voice for. But something just felt different as we moved into this election cycle. It has felt a little bit different, I think, in American politics, the difference between the Republicans and the Democrats, and just some of the things happening around women's rights, human rights, immigration, social equity. I just kind of felt myself like, you know, I think I'm going to put a stake in the ground and I'm going to say, if you would like to use my voice in political advertising, it needs to be for Democrats or progressive, you know, mission-driven causes, and I'm simply going to decline opportunities that are offered to me from the red or conservative side of the coin. So I started to think, you know, are there other people out there that feel the same way I do, that are interested in, from a business perspective, putting themselves out there to be, you know, talents for hire for political advertising, and are also willing to put a stake in the ground and say, I really only want to advocate the progressive causes. And I was pleased to find that the answer was yes. So that's kind of how it was born. And I reached out to a bunch of different talents that I had met at voiceover conferences or, you know, people that I had been sitting next to at an audition before, maybe even some people who had been my competition before. And with the help of Ian and a couple of our other kind of co-founders, we founded this kind of steering committee. And we went out to look for kind of each voice that we thought that political advertisers would be interested in. So we landed on the tagline, voices that look and sound like America today. So we tried to find one in each lane that you would need. So we have millennials and Gen Z sounding voices, middle-aged Generation X sounding voices, and baby boomer senior mature sounding voices. We have both men and women. And then we also wanted to offer diverse voices. So we have African-American talents. We have Hispanic bilingual talents who also speak Spanish. We have Asian-American talents. And we even have one talent who is non-binary transgender. So we wanted to present voices that we thought really reflected the American electorate today. And we thought it would be a more compelling offering when we were marketing to people who need political voices to say, we're not just one voice, we're 20 voices that you can choose from. And it's a one-stop shop.
Yeah, that's interesting. And it's something that we've seen also with the digital campaigners, that they tend to align with the political causes that they represent. Like, you don't have many sort of bipartisan digital campaign groups. So Maria, you market yourself as a millennial female voice. Ian, what about you? What's your kind of profile?
Mine is pretty similar. I am a, quote, woke white millennial guy. at least that is how I end up billing myself, as well as where I tend to get cast. And, you know, one of the things that that comes up in this a lot, Maria was talking a moment ago about how people would voice purple and, you know, making that decision to put the stake in the ground as far as what we feel and kind of living our ideals and our beliefs. And, you know, there's a lot of very talented voice actors out there, and I like to think that I'm one of them, but I also know where my limits are. And one of them is that if I don't believe in the product, if I don't believe in the message that's going out, you can absolutely hear it, you know, and you can hear that with just about anybody in any kind of campaign. Like, you can tell when somebody is trying to sell you a bridge, so to speak. And so in doing this, it's just so much easier to double down on what you actually believe in and to just be your authentic self in what you're putting out there. Which again, you know, as quote, woke white millennial guy, it's a bit of my wheelhouse.
Right. So Maria had mentioned that she got into political work in 2018. First, how do you get into voice acting? And then where does the political come into? Because I guess there's a big commercial component, right? But I guess what was the decision or the crossover, I guess, from business or the work you normally do into political?
Yeah, the crossover is, you know, in some cases, it's the same people who are doing commercial and political work. So, you know, if you get outside of the top 10 media markets, you have, you know, small advertising agencies that do all sorts of work for clients in their kind of immediate area. So, you know, markets like Norfolk, Virginia, or, you know, Jacksonville, Florida, those kinds of smaller pockets. So a lot of the clients that I've worked for doing, you know, things like commercial videos or website videos for their local clientele that they've been able to cultivate, those same people pick up some political advertising for their local and state races or down ballot initiatives that are happening on a more local level. So I don't know that they look at it as anything other than just advertising, whether they're advertising a product or they're advertising a candidate. So they might turn to that same roster of voice talent that they're used to using, or they might, you know, turn to the same process and procedures that they do for casting voices. For the larger initiatives, so these are, you know, your federal races, obviously the presidential campaign, there is a machine at work. So there are dedicated marketing and advertising firms and political communications firms that's all they do. So it's about finding out, you know, who those people are, what they're working on, and then what their process might be. Some of them cast voiceover through major talent agents in New York, LA, Chicago, Atlanta. Some of them might have dedicated rosters of people that they've worked with time and again, and they know that those voices tend to convert. But it's from a process perspective as a talent, it's very similar. You know, we're given a script, we're asked to audition. We, you know, may or may not have to do, you know, several rounds or callbacks to determine, you know, are you going to be the voice of a campaign or is it just a spot? It's actually a pretty similar road that you travel, you know, to a commercial product advertising.
The only thing that I would add to that, too, is that like with political voiceover in particular and political advertising as a whole, the rate of turnaround is so much quicker because
absolutely,
ultimately, like, you know, not only do they need to get out, you know, especially in, say, a primary, you know, where things are happening and changing on a dime every single day, you need to get that messaging out immediately. Whereas like for a, let's say for a gasoline commercial or a yogurt commercial or something like that, like if you have a couple of weeks where the dates get kind of fudged, it's usually not that big a deal. Unless it's, of course, in these uncertain times commercial, in which case get those out right now because these are very uncertain times.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not uncommon for, you know, if you have a political client that you've called cultivated a firm that you've worked with, whether it's, you know, dedicated political advertising or an advertising firm that picks up political work, it is not uncommon to get emails or texts at 8 p.m. on a Friday because sometimes they're responding to something that their competitor has done. So I had a session that was on, you know, Saturday at 11 because they were doing an attack ad to respond to an attack ad that had just been released. So being able to be, you know, on call, available, having a studio in your home so that you don't have to worry about finding outside space to do the recording, that makes you just indispensable to the political producers.
And also part of it, too, is once they find that voice, and especially with something like Blue Wave, like once they find the hub of those voices, you know, for us as business people in this, too, it's making it easier for them to return to us because we're not a problem at the end of the day. Like the last thing that when you're working on that tight of a turnaround, you know, the last thing that you want to have is the cherry on your sundae, on your advertising sundae, which is really at the end of the day, the voiceover, to then ruin the whole thing by not being available, by not being able to come through.
Right. It's interesting that quick turnaround time. And that's something that you really kind of promote on your website, is that both of you are working from home studios and therefore kind of more flexible, kind of like also with podcasting, right? It's quite democratized radio. So you guys basically are running out of your home, right?
Yes. Yep. We both have full broadcast ready home studios, which also means that, you know, as much like with the rest of this, it is a 24/7 commitment because you never know when people are going to be needing our services, especially in the political sphere. So having a dedicated home studio is kind of a must. But, you know, just like you said, with making a good podcast, you need to be able to have that. You need to be able to have that at the ready so that you're able to respond and put out the content that you want to put out.
Yeah, we made that a requirement of people for the collective. So as we were kind of hunting and pecking for the different voice types that we wanted, one of our first questions was, do you have your own home studio? And for people who answered no, they were filtered out of consideration pretty quickly because we just knew that they wouldn't be able to respond to the demand of the turnaround time.
Gotcha. Yeah, it's super interesting. And I have so many questions for you because I can hear your voice being in a political ad. Also, because I've watched some and the listeners have heard some examples. Are you in kind of voice acting mode right now, or is this what you sound like normally?
Nope. this is who we are. Maria and I meet at least a couple times each week. This is just how we be.
Yeah, I can tell you that Ian is not performing. He is just being the Ian that he is known to be. And, you know, I'm kind of doing my usual shoulder shrug as I'm talking to you. I'm Italian, so I talk with my hands. So what I'm doing right now is no different than kind of what I do every day when I'm talking to friends, husband, other things. Yeah.
Interesting. I have some more granular questions about the political ads and social media, but I first want to ask a bit more about voice acting, which is like what kind of training goes into it? I mean, I'm sure you have to master different accents, different emotions, but at a more technical level, what kind of training goes into voiceover work?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think it's one that Ian and I find answering a lot because as soon as someone finds out that you do voiceover work, their next question is, how do I do it?
Yep.
It seems like one of those jobs that everybody thinks they can do and wants to be able to do. But it is more difficult than it seems. It's more than just talking into a microphone. For me, I think a really good base to be a voiceover performer and to be a voice actor is just acting in general. So
yep,
whether that
absolutely.
Is musical theater training, you know, straight acting training like scene study, stand-up comedy classes or improv classes, that's the foundation that I stand on. So I've personally been an actor since I was 11 years old. I was like that drama club kid that was auditioning for like the local production of Sound of Music in the early 90s. So I've been acting for a very long time. So for me, the acting part of voice acting comes very, very naturally. The foundation of being able to take direction is something that's just kind of in me now. That's part of my ethos. Then there is kind of the nuance of what it means to be acting in front of the microphone. That's the part that took me the longest because I was used to kind of belting out musicals to the very, very back row. So being able to bring that same level of enthusiasm and performance to the small space between you and the microphone and how you can bring that nuance and that performance and that acting technique without having to shout it to the back row. So microphone technique, performance, and learning how to bring that level of intimacy and smallness while not losing any of the performance is another big piece of it. Being able to take direction, you know, I'm sitting in my booth right now talking to you guys. I've got you in my cans. You know, what that takes to be able to listen to potentially a conference call of 15 people, each trying to express to you what they want you to do when you cannot see them, you cannot read their body language, and they're going to use all different kinds of keywords or read it to you in a terrible way and ask you to read it back to them, you know, with your flourish. So being able to take that direction like in the moment and live is absolutely a skill to cultivate. And then there's a technical aspect to it. You know, voiceover used to be that you would get hired for a job and then you would report to a studio and all you had to do was be the talent. You would just walk in, put your headphones on, read the script and leave. And in the new world that we're in, you mentioned, you know, kind of the democratization of media, we are part of that too. So, you know, Ian and I have studios in our home. We have all sorts of remote connection technology that allows engineers at recording studios to kind of dial into our computer, our microphone so that they can record us remotely. So there has to be a technical capacity available. You don't have to be a whiz at this and you don't have to log on and take, you know, audio editing classes at Full Sail University or anything like that. But you have to know what you're doing. You have to be able to run your equipment. You have to know how to use it. So there's a technical proficiency that comes with being a, you know, full-time voice actor that operates out of their home. And then it's just kind of keeping up with stuff, keeping up with the trends, knowing what's booking, knowing what type of tone different brands are using. We joke that our job is actually auditioning and that we spend, you know, all the time auditioning for different campaigns and projects. And then if you book the job, Yahtzee, but your job is actually to be a really proficient professional auditioner.
That's, man, I... Couldn't have said it better. Like, a lot of my background is also acting, but also from like the improv and sketch comedy communities. And for me, it started out with really with making fun of commercials and then insisting every time that we did something that was making fun of a commercial that I did the voiceover. And then like eventually I got good enough at that I'm like, oh, I can actually do this for real. But, you know, that all said, we've got some great friends who have no acting background, at least not professionally before they got into voice acting, who have been able to pick it up as they go. Much like me with, for example, with the technical end of it, I'm kind of a Luddite. And the voice acting end of it, like the talent end of it, like that's always the thing that's driven me as far as making this my business. But the rest of it, man, I needed to hire out so much to get coached into how to make good audio, what good audio sounds like, how to make my environment conducive to good audio. There ends up being a lot of, you know, you used the word granular before, and there ends up being like a lot of little granular bits that you don't necessarily know about until you get into it. But, you know, that's one of the joys of any profession. Like, you never know what it takes to make an actual tile unless you go and watch the process of like molding clay and going to a kiln and watching the cutting and such. Like, it's the same thing with this kind of thing. It's just a different kind of finesse.
Right. We'll get to some scripts that you've sent a bit later in the episode, but I was just trying to read like a real American ad, and it's a lot harder than you think when you actually try to do it. It's in your head, it sounds like you could do it, but then actually doing it is tough, also without laughing as you're doing it.
Man, and also you get to, there are ads where, you know, they know that it's, you know that it's going to be like a 15-second ad, a 6-second ad, a 30-second ad, but then you've got, you know, 120 words of copy that you're trying to cram into, you know, say 30 seconds. And a normal rate of speaking is about 150 to 160 words per minute. Maria and I are both pretty fast talkers, so like we can cram things in pretty well. But, you know, you'll get that kind of ad copy, or, you know, any kind of copy, where there's, especially with political copy, where there is so many things that you want to put into that 30-second or 15-second, whatever it may be, and trying to condense that into that time and still have it sound real and actually make a genuine connection to it, as opposed to just speeding through it. It's not to pat ourselves on the back, but it's pretty hard. Like, I still struggle with it sometimes.
This is one of those things that, like, you know, if somebody was asking me to like create a class on like voice acting or something, like, I don't even know how I would communicate this to someone. But yesterday I did a session for a spot. It's going to be a 30-second ad and a 15-second ad. We did the 30. It worked out great. And like Ian said, in the 15, it was running, you know, maybe a little long. And they were like, oh, you know, we were wondering if we could get it just to about 13 seconds. Like, do you know how to internalize that direction? Like, okay, I have a 15-second spot and I need to make it 13 seconds. It's almost like you're turning a dial on yourself. Like, oh, I'm going to go, you know, 10% faster. And I know I want to speed through this part of it. And I want to, you know, massage out or tease out this part of it because it's important. And being able to do that just in the moment at the drop of a hat, those are the things that really come with practice and doing lots and lots of sessions. And then, you know, you do the read and I report back like, okay, that one came in at 13.1. And then people are just like, how did you do that? And I can't tell you. I can't tell you. I just know what to do. I can look at the script and know where I need to move a little faster, where I have room to really billboard a brand name or a keyword or something like that. And that's the difference between just having a good sounding voice and being able to read into a microphone and being a voice actor, because you can bring that to it. I've taken a lot of, you know, classes and seminars over the years where you get to be in kind of an educational setting with maybe 10 or 15 people. Everybody gets to read a piece of copy for, you know, an agent or a casting director or something. And that's where you hear the difference in someone who knows what they're doing or someone who's maybe at an earlier stage of their journey. Because the people who are at the earlier stage of their journey, they just sound like they're reading. You know, they don't know the words that are coming next. They're taking breaths at weird places, the way that we as human beings take breaths at weird places. And then you hear someone who's a little bit further in their journey and you're like, oh, I hear the difference. I hear what it means to just have a cool sounding voice and reading something on a page. And I hear what it means to bring something to life off the page.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And I'm really excited to get to this little demo we're doing towards the end of the episode. But I want to ask you a bit about both the medium and the content first. So looking at the medium, what is the kind of role of the medium when you're crafting a political voiceover? Because we're seeing so much of political advertising going towards digital. Does that influence the script or delivery in any way?
It does. And the main way that it tends to is that, you know, you think about the way that people have typically heard and interacted with political advertisements in the past. It's been in a big room, right? It's either been, you know, through TV or it's been through your car radio, whatever it may be. Like, the sound is going to different parts of the environment, wherever it may be. And now, especially in the last like 5, 10, 15 years, it's all on headphones. And so it's really changed the ways in which, you know, the ways in which people are hearing it, because there's a huge difference between somebody coming up to you and going like, hey, do you want to come out to this thing on Sunday with me? And somebody going, Sunday, 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 there's going to be a sale. Like, it's radically different. And the thing of it, too, is that, like, you know, those more intimate kind of ads, because they're coming to you through your headphones, they're also interrupting you. By nature, they're interrupting whatever it is that you're doing otherwise. They're pulling you out of your experience. And so, again, like, if you're being pulled out of your experience, whatever it may be, and again, whether it's for a commercial for motor oil or for a political candidate, and in fact, especially for a political candidate, if you're going to be pulling somebody out, you got to be kind to them. It's got to be a friendlier, more intimate read.
Interesting. And what about, you know, different social media platforms? Are there differences in strategy depending on the platforms? And, you know, do you have politicians or campaigns come to you and say, you know, we want this for Twitter and this for Facebook? Or kind of how does that cross-platform aspect work?
Yeah, I think it's knowing the audience really on the platform. And there's a ton of data out there about who's using what. You know, who are the power users of Facebook? Who are the power users of Instagram? And like in this election season, people are talking about TikTok all the time because that's where you can meet all of the, you know, Gen Z electorate, and millennials have taken over TikTok in the quarantine with their fort building and cat videos. So I think it's understanding kind of the demographic that the person is trying to target on that particular platform, because I think that has a lot of effect on it. You know, on Facebook, which I think is probably still taking the largest piece of the digital advertising pie, in addition to just like straight pre-roll videos that people are using either through YouTube or Google, Facebook has done, you know, the interesting thing of launching not only the opportunity to do pre-roll, but also mid-roll the way that YouTube did. So the best example that I use is I follow the Facebook page, The Dodo, which is animal rescue and things like that. So the video will start, and just as the person is about to rescue the kitten out of the sewer, you get the mid-roll ad.
Right.
And if you want to know if they saved the kitten or not, you need to make it through the mid-roll ad. So, you know, it provides a lot of value in that way. So understanding the target demographics of who's using the particular platform, I think, is driving how people are deciding where they want to place the ad. I made a donation today to Amy McGrath's campaign. She's running to unseat Mitch McConnell. And I got a targeted ad from her on Instagram. And I literally clicked, you know, donate, set it up, whatever. And then the next 20 minutes of using Instagram, every single ad that was in my stream were other people who are trying to unseat Republican incumbents in Congress. So just by my one action, I've now told Instagram what I want to do for the rest of my life. But all of those advertisements were direct address from the candidate. So it was candidate testimonial. So it was the person who's running to unseat Lindsey Graham in South Carolina. It was the woman who was also featured. I don't remember her name, but she was featured in the documentary with AOC. She's running to unseat an incumbent in West Virginia. And it was all of them kind of direct addressing to Instagram audiences. So as you're scrolling through, it looks like the same videos that you're seeing from your friends and family. Like, hey, guys, you just asked about my skincare routine. It looks like that video. So I do think that there's an element of understanding how people are using the platform and then tailoring the advertising specifically to how it will look, to Ian's point, like the least interruptive. Like, it looks like it belongs in the feed.
Yeah, you mentioned direct address, and I want to ask you a bit about the content and kind of where the voice is coming from in the ad. And, you know, there's obviously different types of political ads. There's introduction to the candidate ads, there's attack ads, issue ads. And in all of those, if you were doing the voiceover, you would be communicating as the campaign. You would be the campaign's voice in that ad. But there's also the citizen testimonial. And I'm wondering how, when you're voicing as a citizen, you know, what are the differences between that and sort of coming from the official campaign?
I love doing citizen testimonials, and I love them because I get to be my authentic self in those, because that is always the most fun. It's always the most natural connection, because ultimately, like, you know, I'm a lover. I'm not a fighter. And if I'm doing a citizen testimonial, it's almost always a heartfelt message. It's something that, especially knowing that, like, we only work in the Democratic sphere, so it's already stuff that I agree with. It's not a huge leap for me to turn on, like, that little bit of extra empathy to think about, like, what this person is actually going through that made them give this kind of testimonial. So it makes for a really natural connection. And you don't have to put on, like, any sort of specific tone, because, like, you know, for a citizen testimonial, it's a personal story versus, as exactly as you said, like, if you're doing an attack ad or an image ad, otherwise you're speaking on behalf of the campaign. And so the words that are being used are completely different. Like, you know, for example, the way that I'm talking right now, most of my citizen testimonial auditions and ads sound like this because it's me. It's me putting myself in those shoes versus something, you know, where you have to find a way to gently still bark at what it is that you're trying to get across when you're on behalf of the campaign because you have to cut through the clutter so much.
The biggest thing for me when I'm doing citizen testimonials is I have to not be so good, quote unquote. So in today's world, conversational voiceover is very much in vogue and on trend. So it doesn't sound like that Sunday announcer that Ian referenced earlier. It's just your friend or your mom or your husband or your boyfriend or whatever kind of recommending a product to you. It's something that I use. I think you would use it. If you listen to commercial voiceover, you'll notice that that's the majority of the reads that you're seeing, especially in national advertisements. My biggest challenge as a trained actor, you know, since age 11, is that I have fantastic diction and I'm also very good at doing my job. So I'm used to giving the brand name a little extra emphasis or using a little extra emphasis on a, you know, adverb or something in the spot. Like, this is what I really want to pull out for you to understand. So when I'm auditioning for citizen testimonials or doing those sessions, I have to remind myself to not be a voice actor. I have to stop doing what I've been trained to do. And that might mean slopping up your diction a little bit and talking the way that people talk. You know, we don't say, "Hey, Ian, would you like to go to the mall?" question mark. We say, "Hey, Ian, want to go to the mall?" So you have to be able to kind of turn down the, like, actor training and turn down the diction and everything that's made you a fantastic, eloquent speaker, and remember to just be a person.
The thing that Maria usually mentions that is, like, stuck with me whenever I'm doing those is just lowering the boom over a conversation. Like, you're having a coffee house conversation with, you know, your dad or with your best friend or whoever it may be. And, you know, when you're doing that, you're not talking loudly, you're not putting on any airs, you're just being yourself with that person. It's just like lowering a boom mic right over it. It is such a wonderful visual for what those really ought to sound and feel like.
Yeah, you're just like capturing the last 15 seconds of somebody's conversation. That's the ad.
Interesting, because I guess it gets to this idea of authenticity, right? I guess there's one way to be authentic as a campaign, which is more booming professional. And then there's, you know, as you were saying, the way people actually talk. You don't want to have a campaign selling you a candidate's image when you're having a citizen testimonial. It gets this idea of authenticity, I think.
Completely.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
There's you had somebody on in the last couple of weeks who worked for the Buttigieg campaign. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about using Pinterest to reach voters and about Buttigieg remodeling his house and being able to connect with voters in that way. And, like, that kind of authenticity, like, that's, it's genius. Because that's ultimately, like, that's who we trust, you know, in this era in which, you know, nobody seems to trust the media. Everybody's got a skeptical eye to everybody around them. It is the people who are around you and who sound like you that you trust the most. That's one of the, I mean, you know, not to toot our own horn, but that's one of the great things about what we're trying to do with Blue Wave Voiceover is that it doesn't matter who it is that you're trying to reach. Like, we've all got your friend one way or another. Like, we've got somebody who can have that conversation and connect with you in an authentic and real way.
Right. And I mean, we know from, you know, plenty of political science research that emotions play a huge role in voter attitudes and mobilization. And I noticed that for each of your talents on the website, they have a sort of set of keywords, or I would say kind of emotions that they offer, things like confident or positive, friendly. And I'm curious about the role of negative emotions, because I'm assuming these are key in attack ads. So, I mean, you know, how do you frame these type of characteristics and how do you sort of convey emotions with them, if that makes sense?
It does. And so for me, like, a lot of the, you know, just on the notion of keywords, a lot of the keywords that will come up for me with them are they're not like be angry or be upset. It's be direct, be firm, be clear. Those things where it's like, you know, it's not trying to reprimand so much as do a one-sided stern talking to might be the best way that I can explain what it's like. Because ultimately, like, you still don't want to, you know, you're, by the nature of that kind of ad, you're still badgering people and you're trying to pressure people into acting one way or another. But you also can't go in and just, like, with guns blazing, lighting fires everywhere. It's almost like a righteous indignation that shows up in a lot of it. At least that's what I come across.
My favorite take in attack ads, besides what Ian just said, is sarcasm. And that is kind of biting. And that's where I kind of pull out my inner Janine Garofalo and really kind of dial it up. I did an ad in the last election cycle for a candidate that was running for a state level legislature. And the ad was targeting women. And basically, the person who was running ran down their opponent's record on voting against things for women's equity and women's rights, specifically around reproductive. And I believe very strongly in reproductive rights, and I make a monthly contribution to Planned Parenthood. So that was not hard for me to tap into. But basically, the tone of the ad was extremely sarcastic. You know what so-and-so does? Well, I'll tell you what so-and-so does. They voted this way, and then they voted this way. And those are some of my favorite ads to voice. And again, as Ian said earlier, it's not hard to draw on that because that's how I really feel. That's how I believe. And it's not every day that you get to express it in that way.
Interesting. And these keywords, so you've sent to me ahead of time a list of about 250 keywords that you could sort of dial into different political scripts. So why don't we head into this Wheel of Direction demo, where we have two spots from political campaigns. And I'm thinking we can take the attack ad first, which was an actual campaign from Mike Bloomberg, or an actual spot from Mike Bloomberg. So what I'm thinking is, because I also want to get into this improv mix a bit, I'll play a politician, a Southern politician, and ask you to read this script based on some keywords that I've picked out from the Wheel of Direction.
Beautiful.
That sounds great.
All right, cool. So let's take this off. I don't have improv experience, y'all do, but we'll see how it goes.
Quite all right, man. Just jump right in.
Hi, Maria, Ian, Blue A voiceover.
Hello.
Hey, how y'all doing? So I think y'all got my script. We're going to try to take this guy Trump out the White House. I want to do an attack ad. And y'all have the script. It's about veterans and things that Trump had said about them. But I want it to be like a movie trailer, like an explosive, dynamic movie trailer when people open up their Facebook. So can I get both a male and a female version of a movie trailer attack ad?
Yes, absolutely. Ian, why don't you take it first?
Beautiful. Thank you. The Pentagon. President Trump arrives for a briefing by top military leaders. Trump explodes, attacks the war heroes in the room as losers and a bunch of dopes and babies. Many in the room had risked their lives for our country. Soldiers. Heroes. Attacked by an erratic and out-of-control president. Arrogance. Ignorance. Chaos. Enough. America needs a steady leader who will honor those who serve. Rated R.
Wonderful. Absolutely fantastic. I would watch that on Disney Plus. Maria, how about your version?
The Pentagon. President Trump arrives for a briefing by top military leaders. Trump explodes, attacks the war heroes in the room as losers and a bunch of dopes and babies. Many in the room had risked their lives for our country. Soldiers, heroes, attacked by an erratic and out-of-control president. Arrogance, ignorance, chaos. Enough. America needs a steady leader who will honor those who serve. Rated R. Opens Friday in theaters across America.
Fantastic. Fantastic. A little more drama, I think, in that one. Now, we've been looking at our internal polling data, and it seems like we need to win over some evangelicals. And one of the ways, I've been reading a lot of psychology literature, and I've been reading a lot about subliminal messaging. And one of the keywords I saw on the Wheel of Direction was the voice of God. So I want to see if we can get some voice of God in there and kind of, you know, convert those over to the lat who are persuadable.
Sure. The Pentagon.
President Trump arrives for a briefing by top military leaders. Trump explodes, attacks the war heroes in the room as losers and a bunch of dopes and babies. Many in the room had risked their lives for our country. Soldiers, heroes, attacked by an erratic and out-of-control president. Arrogance, ignorance, chaos. Enough. America needs a steady leader who will honor those who serve.
Such a benevolent creator in that script.
Completely.
Now, Marie, I saw on your website that one of your keywords is sassy.
Yes.
So I'm wondering if we could get this attack ad, a bit sassy with a spice of saucy as well.
Sure. The Pentagon. President Trump arrives for a briefing by top military leaders. Trump explodes, attacks the war heroes in the room as losers and a bunch of dopes and babies. Many in the room had risked their lives for our country. Soldiers, heroes, attacked by an erratic and out-of-control president. Arrogance, ignorance, chaos. Enough. America needs a steady leader who will honor those who serve.
Ooh, I like that. Enough. That was good. That was sassy. All right. End scene. That was cool. Really cool how the same script can be, twisted so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's always a lot to play with, and that's why, you know, those keywords, like, they help a lot. Like, I'm not ashamed to admit it, like, voice of God, that one's a struggle for me. But it's nice to have those things to push against that, you know, where they're going and what they want viewers and voters to be hearing and feeling through it.
Right. And I'll play that ad now so that you can hear what it sounds like, again, from the Bloomberg campaign.
The Pentagon. President Trump arrives for a briefing by top military leaders. Trump explodes, attacks the war heroes in the room as losers and a bunch of dopes and babies. Many in the room had risked their lives for our country. Soldiers, heroes, attacked by an erratic and out-of-control president. Arrogance, ignorance, chaos. Enough. America needs a steady leader who will honor those who serve.
Why don't we switch over to the image spot, which was for Representative Ellen Lipton, a Democrat in Michigan. And this one is a very kind of, I guess, empathetic ad. It's about a girl named DeCoriana who, because of Ellen Lipton's school programs, was able to go to college. And I guess I'll play that one first. And then for the wheel of direction, I want to put a little different spin on it from how it actually sounds. So let's hear that clip first. And here it is.
DeCoriana had promise, but not opportunity. That's where Ellen Lipton came in. After battling Betsy DeVos and for-profit schools, Ellen fought to bring promise zones to her community, providing college tuition and vocational training to kids with dreams, but without the resources to achieve them. Now DeCoriana's in college, and Ellen Lipton's running for Congress. Because fighting for public schools isn't new, but it is personal.
I'm Ellen Lipton, and I approve this message.
So we have this empathetic ad, but I was thinking, I don't know, maybe Maria, if you could take this one, if this keyword works with you, and that is demonic.
Sure.
If we put a demonic spin on an empathetic ad, and then I have one for Ian,
sure,
as well.
DeCoriana had promise, but not opportunity. That's where Ellen Lipton came in. After battling Betsy DeVos and for-profit schools, Ellen fought to bring promise zones to her community, providing college tuition and vocational training to kids with dreams, but without the resources to achieve them. Now DeCoriana is in college, and Ellen Lipton is running for Congress, because fighting for public schools isn't new, but it is personal.
I'm cracking up.
Oh, I just spit all over my iPad.
Oh yeah, you get a demonic personal on there. Like that's gonna spit takes everywhere.
Yeah, I'm gonna need to get
gold.
A paper towel.
Mm-mm. That's gold. All right. So Ian, one last one for you.
Yeah.
I think this will fit great. Old time radio, and I was thinking kind of with a bit of play by play, like a old school sportscaster,
sure,
baseball or something.
Oh, Doctor, DeCoriana had promise but not opportunity, and that's where Ellen Lipton came in. After battling Betsy DeVos in for-profit schools, Ellen fought to bring promise zones to her community, providing college tuition and vocational training to kids with dreams but without the resources to achieve them. Hey, now DeCoriana is in college and Ellen Lipton is running for Congress, because fighting for public schools isn't new, but it is personal.
Ugh, I literally knelt on the floor.
Thanks for teeing me up with a fun one, man.
That is too funny. Oh, my God. Well, this has been great. Hopefully, the listeners who have stuck with us have been able to see what kind of talent you have and bring it into the political space in 2020 for Democrats. So, Maria, Ian, thanks so much for taking the time out and coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having us.
Michael, this has been an absolute blast. Thank you very, very much, man.
I've just been speaking to Maria Pendolino and Ian Fishman, co-founders of Blue Wave VoiceOver. You can check out their range of voiceover talents at bluewavevoiceover.com. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Social Media and Politics Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can follow the show at SMNP Podcast. Visit the website at socialmediaandpolitics.org. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, signing off from Elmo. See you next time.